Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to our show this morning. It's your host, Chris Deakle, in the studio. Today with us, we have Peggy Titus Hall, who is a certified professional coach and co-active coaching, focusing on communication and career transition. I can barely read this morning. Of course, I can barely read anytime. she is with People Growth LLC. So welcome this morning, Peg.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
Well, you know, tell me about People Growth. What is that and why the name?
Well, the name truly focuses on how I can help work with people to help them grow within themselves in terms of focusing on career transition and working towards something aligned with what excites them and where their passions lie.
Now explain that a little bit. For the viewers out there that don't really understand, why are people doing this?
Well, you know, you spend your life in a job, 40 hours, 50 hours, 60 or even more hours a week, every week, every year, and so you probably should do something that you enjoy. And the idea is to help people understand the things that excite them, the things that they love to do, and then see where they can transition to those areas so that they're doing the kinds of things that really help them get through the day.
Oh, fantastic. So in other words, we shouldn't go to work and be miserable.
Exactly.
Or more importantly, go there and make life miserable for all those people that work with
them. Yeah, that's kind of the thing. You really don't, if you're going to be there all that time, you really need to be doing something that you enjoy. Now, it can't be 100% of the time, but if you know in principle that it's something that helps people or something that fixes things, and these are the kinds of things that you love to do, then we need to figure out what those things are and help you move towards them.
I see. Now, how do you do that?
Well, my focus is career transition, and so I work in developing the job search tools. So that includes things like developing your communication strategy where you know what to tell people as to why you're changing or why you're making the transition and what it is that you bring to the table. And that involves some bragging, so people generally need to learn how to do that. And then we get into things, of course, like the resume and marketing plans, and we talk about how to develop networking contacts and what to say to these networking contacts. So there's like a 14-step process that you can use, and depending where the client is at that point in his or her transition, we start where that point at that point, and then move them from there to the next steps.
Now, in doing that, what do you do with someone who comes to you? I presume that individuals come to you and say, "Hey, I need to find another job for whatever reason." How do you help them? What specific things do you have that you use to help them?
Okay, well, let's give an example. For example, I had a client not too long ago that was in sales and was brilliant in sales, but needed to make a change for personal reasons in the company and wanted to get into something outside, doing something in sales, but different from the kinds of things that he was doing. He was selling or creating and developing packaging for shipping, and predominantly liquid shipments. So in any event, he wanted to make that transition. So we worked on developing a resume, and since it was a family-owned business, he never needed a resume. So we had to develop the resume from scratch. So we built up this resume, and it turned out that this man was brilliant. I mean, he was the top salesman in the company. He had brought in millions of dollars in sales, and the interesting thing about that relationship was that we had to bubble that stuff up. We had to get him to say, "Oh, yeah, I did have these sales, and I did make this difference and this impact on this company." And how we relate that in a resume and in a marketing plan is how either he was starting a new business, so he could use those tools and those transferable skills to move into this particular industry. And so we look at it step by step. We develop that communication plan when he starts to talk to people about what it is he wants to do and what he brings to the table. And we practice that communication strategy. And then from there, we develop the resume. Notice that the resume isn't always the first thing. Many clients like to come in and say, "Okay, I'm ready to change jobs. I need a resume." Well, wait a minute, time out. We need to talk about what you want and how you want to get there. And so once we start that process, we develop the resume, And then we talk about how to talk to people. What are the steps that it takes to find out what other people are doing? So say, for example, you want to get into insurance and you want to sell insurance because you think it's a great thing for people. You talk to other people who have been in insurance for a long, long time. So we develop that strategy. And one of the biggest things in that strategy is holding the client accountable. If the client says, okay, I'm going to talk to five people in insurance over the next 2 weeks, then 2 weeks later when they come to see me, I'll say, how did it go? And if they didn't do it, then we talk about what got
what. You don't spank them with a ruler.
No, no. And that's one of the nice things about coaching is that I'm not here to judge, but I'm here to help them understand, A, why they want to do it, and B, if they're not doing it, what gets in the way.
You know, and what kind of things get in the way?
Well, a lot of it is lack of confidence. I've never done this before, so I can't, I don't think I can do it. And when I talk to other people, wow, look at all the things that they can do and that I don't think I can do. So we talk about all of the things that they can do. And in building the communication strategy and being able to say, I'm really good at this, and being able to understand those skills and express those skills to others, that helps them build confidence and know, oh, yeah, well, maybe, hey, I can do this. I can try this, and it's worth the risk. And if I get scared, I've got somebody on my side that I can bounce it off of and not judge me and say, what, are you nuts? Are you crazy? You know, everybody in their family is saying, you can't do this. Wait. And I'm saying, okay, well, let's think about it.
Well, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, the way you're helping people really come to grips with what do they need to do to promote themselves? I mean, you're really a marketing strategist.
Exactly. And a lot of it has to do with the concept of bragging. Bragging has a bad rap, and we know many braggarts in our lives. But overall, the idea of being able to say to a networking contact or a hiring manager or an individual that you that does the same kinds of things that you want to do, it's to be able to say, I'm good at this. And how can I apply what I'm good at doing to this new arena or to this other arena or other organization where I want to, that I want to move to?
How did you get into this line of work?
Well, it's interesting that you asked because I had an epiphany. I was working for a major CPA firm as an instructional designer, and part of my role as a senior instructional designer was as a people manager. And I was responsible for the careers of many people, about 15 people over the 6 years that I was with this firm, in terms of their internal careers, you know, moving around, moving up, and all that sort of thing. And I was in Las Colinas, Texas, and I like Texas, but there's not a heck of a lot to do in Las Colinas, Texas. It was a lousy day. My client was being obnoxious. The technology was giving me all sorts of headaches. And then I got a phone call from one of my people. And the last thing I wanted to do was talk to this person because I wanted to get the heck out of the building. And so his question was, I was a designer and he was a developer. He took the design that I made and put it in the tool for the end user to use. But he wanted to move from the development part to the back end to make it all work. But to do so, we would have to relocate. He was in his mid-20s, living at home in Cleveland, Ohio. He didn't really want to move, but we talked about all the things that he needed to do, you know, to talk to people, find out what it took, you know, if it was possible, you know, what was the training or information that he had to have before he made the transition. We talked for about an hour. When I hung up the phone, I was a changed woman. And I said to myself right then and there, there's got to be a way to make a living at that. You know, at being able to help people make those discoveries. So at the time, the Georgia Career Development Association was having monthly meetings. And I went to one of their meetings, and a coach from the Georgia Coach Association was the speaker. And I wish I could remember her name, because this woman changed my life. She talked about coaching and how to get the training and the Georgia Coach Association, and I was so intrigued. I went to the next meeting of the GCA, and I found out about training and certification, and long story short, that's how I got into it. And, of course, my focus has always been career transition, so I wanted to apply that coaching skill set to the development of career, to job search tools.
I see. Now, to become a coach, what did you do?
Well, one of the things that the Georgia Coach Association does emphasize is the need for training. You know, so many people are calling themselves coaches these days that really don't understand that coaching is a skill set, and you need to learn and understand those skill sets. And one of the, I think we had talked about before was one of the things that the two words that are primarily part of coaching is, you know, shut up. You know, you really need to.
You mean, you know, you don't tell that to your client.
No. It's the coach that needs to shut up. The coach needs to be the good listener, and the coach needs to create a safe place where a client can explore without being judged. And that takes learning. That takes practice. That takes self-management. And not everybody has that. And then from there, I worked with the Coaches Training Institute, and I had 5 months of training. And then from there, a couple of years later, I had 6 months of training for my certification. And it just expanded on those coaching skills and required practice and coaching with clients and keep monitoring that the number of hours that I did and learning all sorts of amazing things about how important it is to shut up and listen.
Now, in addition to being the fly on the wall and getting people to talk about themselves rather than you talk about yourself, which is everyone's natural tendency because they know how fascinating they are, I noticed that you use something called DISC. What is that?
As part of my practice as a coach, I use the DISC assessment, which stands for dominating. It's behavioral. It studies behavior, and it studies behavior with 4 major categories. Dominance, influence, steadiness, and compliance. And of course, there are millions of variations within those 4 basic behavioral characteristics. But I like the DISC because it's very straightforward. There's little interpretation. People get to see who they are. We get to talk about the very specific areas that they're keys to how they like to be managed, how they like to be communicated with. Within the results of the test, they learn how to communicate with other behavioral types. And it's a very straightforward program. I actually work with a group. I contract with an organization that allows me to do the DISC with groups, which is always fun because you can see them giggle and laugh and think, wait a minute, that's not me. But they really find out that it actually is and how to adjust to the communication style.
Does this partially explain why, you know, sales thinks IT are idiots and vice versa?
Yes, exactly. I mean, and that's the whole thing. When you use an assessment and you know more about yourself and how you communicate and how you like to be communicated with, that's a big plus in when you're looking to make a career transition. Because as you walk into an interview or you walk into an environment where you're learning about a company, you can see how the relationships of the other employees work. You can see how the interviewer responds to you and talks to you. You know, you can get a flavor of what you know and what you like. So you can, once you understand yourself, you can understand others better.
Yeah. So you would use that to make your communication more effective.
Yes.
With the person you're interviewing with.
Exactly.
So if I were, for instance, one of these characters, and you can pick whatever you think I am.
Let's make you a high D.
Yeah, if you think.
Okay.
And what tipped you off to that?
Well, actually, I think of you as a high I, but a very influencing person because you're making this very easy to talk to you, and you know, and making me feel very comfortable. And that's what influencers do. You know, they like people and they like to be liked. So.
And if I were a high I versus a high D, mm-hmm. how would you talk to me differently? What can a person that comes to you learn from having gone through this?
Well, a high I likes to talk, likes to be, and of course we're talking in generalizations here. They're always in betweens, but a high I likes to talk, likes to be friendly with people, and I'm a high I as well. So I need to be friendly with you before I can do business with you. Whereas a high D. Essentially wants you to be brilliant, be brief, and be gone. Or be brief, be brilliant, and be gone. And essentially doesn't want the details, wants the bottom line, tell me what you need, and wants the facts only. But for me to be working with a high D, I need to know that this person has at least making an attempt to know me and understand me. On the other hand, I, as a high I, need to understand how the high D works. And if this person needs information, it would be up to me to work towards getting the information that they need and getting it done. So it's a give and take. It's not only that this person needs to be friendly with me and deal with me, I need to understand that this person needs the information and needs it now and needs it quickly.
And does that help people read the person so that they don't get offended because this person seems to be very abrupt, for instance?
The whole idea of it is to bring out the best in people. So, say, for, and I like to use the example of a high D with a high S, a high dominant person with a steady person. A steady person likes to keep the status quo, keeps things neat, doesn't like to make waves. And so if a high D comes out and says, I need this now, and I needed, well, I needed this yesterday, and I want to get it done, the high S isn't going to respond all that well. So the D needs to temper his or her approach, and the S needs to step up a little bit in terms of getting the information, getting it done, and not worrying about all the minor details to give to the high D person. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's the same kind of thing. I mean, I think you may have explained something here with the compliance. I mean, I think of compliance as being kind of the guys that have the green eye shades.
Stereotypically, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it always explained why I had a lot of trouble talking with comptrollers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the rule followers. They a compliant person is a person who lives by the rules that are made by others, and there's no gray. There's the rule, you follow the rule, or you don't follow the rule, and you need to follow the rule. So again, there's a little bit of understanding that if you're a rule follower, you probably need to loosen up a little and get so you can get what you need from the other D's, I's, and S's.
So you can learn a lot from this. So.
Oh, you can.
Yeah, and I mean, it probably helps if you have a multiple personality disorder so you can call on whichever one of these you need.
Possibly, yes. So I'm told. I wouldn't know, but... Yeah, but it's very important to understand not only your communication style, but the styles of others, so you can each work well together and get what you need and bring out the best.
So let's go back to the people that you help. When they come to you, you're working with them. What are they afraid of? What are their fears?
Well, in many cases, and I've thought about this because I've been everywhere my clients have been. I mean, I've been laid off, I've been fired, not happy to talk about that, but I've been there, been out of work and scared and all that sort of thing, so I can empathize with many of them. But for their fears primarily focus on making that change. If you're working in a job that you can't stand, one of the pluses about that is you know what's going on there. You know the evil that lurks there. Whereas when you step outside, you don't know what's there. And it's, of course, fear of the unknown. So what we do in the coaching relationship is help the individual learn more about where they're going. So, for example, let's say you as a radio announcer decide, that's it, I want to give all this up and go out in the open road as a truck driver. And everybody in your family and your friends are saying, what are you, nuts? You're crazy. You can't give all this up. You've been working. You make great money, great benefits, all that sort of thing. But, what's scary for many people is the unknown. So what we help them do is make the discoveries, talk to people who are in the business, find out what kind of training you need, what the costs are involved, learn more. And as we all know, knowledge is power. So the more you know, the more you understand what you're getting into, the less fearful it appears.
Because you have knowledge, it's not such an unknown.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're as Pogo said, you've met the enemy and he is us.
Exactly. And you really want to know as much as you can going in about the transition you're making, the environment in which you're working, the companies that you're considering, the people that you're going to be working with. I've been in situations where a couple times where I was fired, where I walked into jobs where I didn't belong. I didn't pay attention to that knot in my stomach. I was single and self-supporting. I needed the job. And when the job was offered to me, I didn't pay attention to that feeling inside that said, this isn't right for me. And I found out, in most cases, within 6 to 7 weeks that, this wasn't working. And somebody else called the shots, and I was out. And in both cases, I can't tell you the overwhelming feeling of relief that I felt because I was in an environment where I didn't belong, and I didn't pay attention to that at the beginning.
Do people come to you from toxic companies?
Oh, all the time. And the toughest part for that is to get through the emotional baggage that comes with that. When somebody's working in an environment where they're not happy, you can just imagine the feelings that they have, the fears, the anger, and the frustration. And we have to, I'm not a therapist, mind you, but we have to weed through some of that and figure out and determine the direction that they're, once they get over the baggage, they need to determine the direction in which they're going and then ultimately start looking forward. And sometimes just looking forward helps alleviate some of that frustration and fear, because now there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Now there's a place to, there's an objective, there's a goal, something to work towards that can help them separate themselves from the frustrating position and organization for which they're working.
Well, isn't this sort of a problem that you bring on yourself because you look to the company for your self-worth, whether it works with self-worth, yeah, rather than yourself?
Yeah, you do. And you get in this cycle of, you know, the spiral, this downward spiral where it just consistently, you know, looking for blaming outwards. And it's not a question that you want to blame yourself for that circumstance, but you want to look in, you know, inwardly to see what it is that you can do or fix or change that needs to be, that can help you get through this situation. And there are some cases, and I've had several clients that where the situation, I'm Dr. Phil, you know, we all watched Dr. Phil when he first started. But one of the things that I remember vividly that he says all the time is you can make the right decision or you can make the decision right. And in one particular case just recently, one of my clients was in a job where it was really not challenging for her. It was not, you know, really bringing out her exceptional talents. And, you know, her family members were saying, you know, she'd go home and she'd complain, and then her husband would want to fix it, you know, and say, well, you're better than this. You've got a degree. Go out there and get a better job and, you know, look at this and talk with Peg Titus Hall to see what possibilities there are. And so we sat down together. But when she looked at the job that she had offered her tremendous flexibility. She has, a lot of children. She wanted to go to their soccer games, to their plays, and to their music recitals and all that sort of thing. And this job gave her that opportunity. And we know in Atlanta there's tons of traffic. Well, this job was 5 minutes from home. And it was the kind of thing where she had, the work kept her busy. But overall, this job afforded her the options that she couldn't think, that she hadn't thought about. And when she looked at the job from that perspective, the job became less tedious. It became more fulfilling in the sense that, look what I can do because of this job. And then she saw her job from a different perspective. And as a result, she's much happier. And she also told her husband to back off. That was another thing that helped, you know, because she was beginning to realize that she could live the life she wanted because of this job. And as a result, could, you know, started enjoying it more.
Do you work with corporations besides individuals?
Yes. I have done the other part of my focus is communications training and coaching. And I have done communications and presentation skills training for organizations where people who need to make presentations need a little help with standing up in front of an audience and knowing how to present themselves and feeling comfortable, how to prepare so that they feel more comfortable. Because I know we've heard that standing in front of an audience can be as petrifying to people as losing a loved one. I mean, it can be that scary to people.
Gosh, what advice, what tips, what techniques do you give to people that are going to make a presentation? You know, give our viewers a little sensation, or our listeners a little sensation of what they can learn.
Well, practice, 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 and the biggest thing is preparation. Knowing what you're going to say, knowing how you want to present it and organizing it, and that takes skills. I mean, there's the foundational tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. You know, I live by that credo. You know, let's tell them what you're going to talk about. Give them the outline. Help you prepare and remember all the things that you want to cover. And then you tell them step by step by step what it is that you want to discuss for each of those points, and then you go back and review so that people will remember what you say. Now, of course, there's a lot of stuff in between, but overall, that's the foundation. And the more you prepare, the more you feel comfortable. It's very scary. And when you realize that people aren't going to throw things at you when you get up there, it gets easier and easier. And I am an absolute believer, and I totally encourage my clients to go to Toastmasters. Toastmasters International has the best communications training program ever for somebody who has to do this for a living or even outside of their occupation and stand up in front of an audience. It is the most nurturing, supportive, and organized presentation skills program ever. And I use a lot of their practices in my corporate training.
I see. I have a friend of mine who is a, you know, just a master of Toastmasters, and he stands out when he stands up.
Isn't it amazing? And
yeah.
You can see the polish. And I have to tell you, though, in many cases, I feel like Toastmasters has ruined me for life, because every time I go to a presentation and I hear, every time I hear that, after a while I start counting them and lose all the content of what the speaker's trying to say. But overall, you know, you can tell a good speaker is comfortable and confident and conversational, like we're doing.
In terms of presentations, I always felt like I did a great presentation if I left without tomato stains.
There you go. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, truly, people, the one thing that I loved about Toastmasters too, and the things that I try to encourage in my own communications training, is that I'm here to support you. I'm here to help you succeed. I'm not looking for ways to help you fail. I'm not going to pick out all the things you did wrong. I'm going to help. We're going to talk a lot about what you did right and some of the areas to consider when you do it the next time.
Gosh, yeah, this is really interesting, because what you're really telling our listeners is that you can learn to do anything. Just because you don't know how to do it perfectly, you can learn it. You can learn almost anything you need to do if you decide to do it, and you get help.
Exactly. Well, that's the whole thing. You get help. That's the ultimate key. If you don't know, find the resources that can help you. When we talk about the job search process, one of the things that I require of all my clients is that they have a library card. And why do they need a library card? Well, if you're doing your job search right, you're targeting companies and organizations where you want to work. So to know about those companies, you need to do research. You need to go into some of the major databases and find out the information about those organizations. And who knows better than how to use those programs and those resources than your local librarian?
A real job asset, job search asset that most people don't think about using.
Right. I worked in outplacement for several years, and I went in there knowing a lot, but I came out of there knowing tons more. And I worked with individuals who are just amazing at helping people work towards finding hope after they've lost their jobs. And we had, in this company, we had tremendous access to great databases, the D&B Million Dollar Database, Vault.com, some Hoovers.com. These are databases that are very expensive for individuals to become, you know, to be members of. But in this particular case, we had them accessible to our clients. But once they were finished with their programs, those resources were gone. But they weren't, because local libraries, I know Fulton County Library and Gwinnett Library have Reference USA, which is an amazing database of company information and who's doing what in the companies and who the titles are of the executives and department heads. But if you don't know how to use that, you talk to the librarians, because they're the most resourceful people on the planet. I mean, truly, they know how to access these databases, get the information that you need, and then develop your job search tools from that point. So it's very important to know those resources.
Also, universities, if you've been a member, if you graduated from a university, particularly the business schools, they have those same databases and often available to alumni.
Exactly. And you can't have too much of that. When you're in your job search, I also think of job seekers as most resourceful people on the planet, because they have to be. And knowing how to use those company resources and find the information that you need. Say, for example, you want to work for Bell South and you don't know too much about what Bell South offers. You go to your librarian and say, I need information on Bell South. They can talk to you about the reference resources. They can help you get into those resources, and you can find out anything you want to know from several different databases, from news articles, from all those things that your local librarian can help you find.
Now, what about social media as a way to find out about companies?
Social media is a good way to find out about companies. I mean, most companies have their own Facebook pages and communications avenues. I have to admit, I am still a learner about social media. I'm learning very much, but one of the things that LinkedIn, for example, is another form of social media, but it's primarily for the business person. That's a great place to do company research. It's a great place to link with individuals who may be in the organizations that you're targeting. So social media does play a big role in that, and LinkedIn is truly a great. If you're a job seeker or a business person, you truly need to be in LinkedIn. You really need to know how to use that social media tool very, very well. And LinkedIn also has many good tutorials that you could go into and find out more about how to use it.
So it's very different than Facebook then. It's business oriented.
Yes, Facebook. I look at Facebook, and of course, there are probably many who would argue it. Facebook is, I look at more social, and it's a great selling tool. It is a great job search tool as well. And I'm still learning to work with my clients in that process. But I still focus on LinkedIn. But the things that you need to be concerned about, though, when it comes to Facebook and Twitter, is that, when you had that rollicking, alumni frat party, where you're standing on the table and dancing, you certainly want to make sure that the pictures of those parties don't get in your Facebook page, because companies are looking at Facebook for the potential employees that will be, that they're going to be interviewing.
So. Well, how about the employees looking at the potential companies and finding those things that, your company, sucks.com?
Well, every resource you can find to learn about that company is going to be helpful, including Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Reference USA, all of those things. The more you know, the less the fear, and the more confident you are going in and making the decision to go or no.
And find out more about this, how does this company really work psychologically?
Exactly.
Not just, brick and mortar and mechanics.
Exactly. Paying attention to that gut feeling when you go in to that interview. I can speak from personal experience. If you have a feeling in your stomach that says, this isn't comfortable, this isn't right, there's just something about it, that you need to pay attention to that.
It's like a personality test.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Personalities clash. So do people with businesses.
Yes.
So if you're from Berkeley, you probably shouldn't be thinking, is your first choice going to a button-down Wall Street firm?
Right, right. And that's where, when we talked about assessments earlier, again, knowing yourself and understanding your communication style and seeing how others communicate in the environment in which you're interviewing. Yeah.
Now let's change gears entirely. Now, you're okay. you're quite active within community events and in fact I think you're says that you're president of the Johns Creek Symphony Orchestra.
Yes,
wow.
The board of directors. Yes, I'm the president of the board of directors. We have our symphony. This is one of my. You're going to have to stop me at some point because I could go on for days about this. The Johns Creek Symphony Orchestra is a fully professional orchestra based in Johns Creek, Georgia, which we are new city. We have been in existence 6 years, and the orchestra began the first year that the city started, which was December 1st, 6 years ago. And we work with fully professional musicians. Many of our musicians play with the Atlanta Symphony, the DeKalb Symphony, and many of them have played internationally and for most of the orchestras in the Southeast. They're amazing, wonderfully talented people. And our music conductor, our conductor and music director, J. Wayne Bauman, was the brainchild behind the whole thing. He and his late wife, Lynn Bauman, who was one of the premier Suzuki violin teachers here in Georgia. And 6 years ago, many years ago, they had this seed germinating, and it finally began to sprout. And we now have a successful organization. We have tremendous support from the community. Mayor Mike Bodker talks about us all the time. And I'm also just so proud to be part of this wonderful gem that is part of Johns Creek.
Now, are you a musician?
I was years ago, but Actually, I was a jazz vocalist for many years when I lived in Ohio. I liked classical music. It wasn't my favorite, but and when I was invited to join the board early on, I learned to become a classical music fan, and I live for every concert and every program and event that we can do to hear. There's nothing like live music. And I'm sure you would agree with me, Chris, that sitting in a concert just about anywhere with listening to live music and watching musicians, talented musicians in action, is exciting.
Although sometimes I must admit, classical music sounds like someone pulling a cat through a knothole by his tail.
Well, not in our orchestra, of course. But, I mean, just recently...
Maybe that was my high school class.
Could be, yeah. But last month we had what was purely a chamber music concert. It was a smaller orchestra. It was a purely classical music concert. And not everybody likes classical music. It's an acquired taste, but... if you want to experience something that you'd never experienced before, this was the perfect concert to go to because I was literally sitting there in the audience, closing my eyes and listening to just amazing, beautiful, old world music that was so wonderfully played. And in complete contrast to the February concert coming up in April, we have a symphonic big band concert. Now, I sang with big bands in Ohio. I sang with 20-piece big bands, and there's nothing like having 20 musicians behind you blaring while you're standing in front of an audience of 2,500 people. I mean, it's like sticking your finger in an electric socket. It's extremely exciting.
Well, mine would sound like it.
Well, but the symphonic big band is, I can't wait. We're doing Gershwin, or doing Hoagy Carmichael, and you know all sorts of amazing big band. You know,
that's quite a production for a new city, isn't it?
It is. It really is. And the good news is that we continually build our audiences, continually build our funding. Although we always look for more because we're a nonprofit arts organization, and we struggle with the same issues that others do. But overall, we are just continually growing in an economic downturn. We've really come out. We're still working. Oh, we don't have any debt, and so we're doing just beautifully, and we hope more and more people come to hear us.
So does that involvement with the community help your business?
Yes, it does, because, well, when you work on a board or you work, you know, on committees with people, they get to see how you work in general, and they can equate the kind of work you do on these committees and these organizations with the work that you do in your business.
So it's not a bad strategy for anyone in business, you know, or employed to get out and get involved in the community and meet people.
Absolutely. In fact, I encourage all my clients who are career transitioners to volunteer, because there are organizations, there are websites where you learn how to turn volunteer work into potential jobs. There's a wonderful website called civicventures.org, civicventures.org, that is focused primarily on individuals who had done volunteer work either through boards or committees or whatever, and turned those positions or that work into actual positions in these nonprofits and truly found their passion. And it's a website people need to look at.
Well, yeah, you're a wellspring of great advice and clearly have a passion for helping people in career transitions, as well as help people with their communication skills. So if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Well, I have a website. It's www.peoplegrowthllc.com. You can reach me at coachpeg@peoplegrowthllc.com. There's a way to contact me right from my website. There's a lot of information there. It talks about all the different things that I do with clients and my passions around the things that I enjoy with my clients, so that's how they can get in touch with me.
Well, Peg, thank you so much for being with us today. I hope our listeners have learned a lot about what they can do. If you're stuck in a job, you don't have to be. If you've lost one, it's not the end of the world. It's the beginning of a great new experience and opportunity, but you need somebody to help you through the process, and a professional like Peg is the person to come to. Did I get that right?
You absolutely got it right. Thanks so much, Chris.